Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is Jill Connor Brown, who reads from and discusses her new book, The Sweet Potato Queen's Wedding Planner / Divorce Guide, published by Crown. Tonight's author on tour is Jill Connor Brown, who reads from and discusses her new book, The Sweet Potato Queen's Wedding Planner, Divorce Guide, published by Crown. In the weeks to come, we have John Hodgman, Sister Helen Prejean, Adrian McKinty, Joanne Greenberg, Allegra Goodman, John Grogan, and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Thank you so much for coming this evening. It's such a wonderful night for a boa, isn't it? Well, she's back. Jill Connor Brown, the Queen's Queen, the doyen of daring and the leader of the pack of sweet potato queen wannabes, dressed up, fit to mow down anything in their paths. From the yearly meeting in Jackson, Mississippi, where they have become that town's biggest tourist attraction, where 2,000 chapters of sweet potato queens gather to flaunt their queenness, to that everyday feeling that something revolutionary is going on. These women have bonded in a sisterhood that is partly trash talk and partly telling the truth, no matter how painful. From her first book, The Sweet Potato Queen's Book of Love, on through God Save the Sweet Potato Queens, The Sweet Potato Queen's Big Ass Cookbook and Financial Planner, and The Sweet Potato Queen's Field Guide to Men, Jill Connor Brown has gathered an ever-growing fan club. Her new book, coming so close to that most romantic of all celebrations, Valentine's Day, is certain to strike a note with even more readers. How clever to have a two-in-one book. One side, the wedding planner. The other side, if things go wrong, the divorce guide. Excuse me. This woman thinks of everything. Now, I don't have cute shoes. You can see what I wear. And my prom dresses are being used by the second generation of little girls for dress up. But even I have something every queen should own. A tiara. Thank you. So celebrate your queenness and welcome the one, the only, Jill Connor Brown.
Thank you. Let me get my nest made. Nuclea, why don't you take a turn while I'm getting my nest made so they can see your outfit. It'll give them something to look at. This is Nuclea Waste. She comes to the parade every year. Their parade outfit is actually this is like grocery store clothes for her. Yeah. The parade, he does the whole parade on stilts every year. The parade route is 2 miles long. Okay. So it is Nuclea is an icon here in Denver and now in Jackson, Mississippi as well. Mm-hmm. Thank you, darling.
Y'all need to come to the parade now.
Absolutely. Oh. Okay, can y'all hear me with this like it is? Or do I need to adjust it more for normal-sized people? Okay. I have to apologize for my own outfit. You know, I like to dress up more for y'all, but... If you've read any in this book, you know that I gave a lot of free ink to a man named Anthony from sequinqueen.com who did make our fabulous dresses on the divorce side, about which I was very happy. But I had ordered a sequin jacket for this book tour that was to be delivered before the end of December. So, forget everything I said. I hate him. I hope he dies. Now, this is, of course, my instant Porter Wagner that was given to me by Queen Fifi, who's the boss queen of the White Trash Lingerie Coconut Queens of Plano, Texas. And, you know, in Texas, they sell sequins and rhinestones and whatnot at the Stop and Go, which I think is as it should be. I said this is my instant Porter Wagner, and I was actually, it may have been here, somewhere out in this area, out west, I was reporting on my instant Porter Wagner, and a little larva was interviewing me from the by larva, I mean she was under 40. You know, if you are under 40, you are larva. It is a wonder you have all your hands and feet. And I know you think you're all grown up because you got cars and stuff, but literally every decision you're making is wrong. And when you get to the other side of 40, you will look back and realize how grown up you were not today. But it will make you into the fabulous woman you're intended to be one day. And you are our future. We're trying to bring you up best we can. But larva nonetheless. So, and that's another thing. I mean, I know, especially larva, everybody thinks they're a mess. But young girls, I think, especially struggle with that. And I look back at pictures of myself now when I was larva and go, my God, I was perfect. What was I thinking? If I looked like that today, I would rule the world. And it just, so we should probably just pause and let the larva go in the bathroom and look in the mirror. And y'all should get, if you are under 40, you are a precious darling girl, and you should get as nearly naked as the law allows and run up and down the road all the time. Because the rest of us are here to tell you a change is going to come. And it is stunning in the true sense of the word. And every day, it's a new world. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like watching snow melt. At any rate, this is my instant Porter Wagner. And so this little larva was interviewing me about it, and she was making notes. And I explained to her, you know, because I could tell it was kind of blank about Porter Wagner. And I said, well, that's where Dolly Parton got her start, was on the Porter Wagner show. And Porter Wagner was the first one to wear sequins and spangles and rhinestones and all that. And so she's writing down. And the next day in the paper, it was reported that Porter Wagner was Dolly Parton's designer. So I just hope that Porter doesn't have a clipping service to read how far he has fallen. And but I have worn this before on Book Two. When I was telling my daughter, who just turned 18, God help me, that I was bitching about not getting my sequin coat and having to wear, you know, my Porter Wagner. And she said, well, you know, it looks neat. Why, you know? And I said, well, I've worn it before. It's like, you know, she really thought I should just shoot myself in the head, you know, as opposed to wearing something again. But, you know, I have been queening for 24 years, so I do have some sequin crap. But right before Christmas, we moved. Did you ever move?
Yes.
Happened to me. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, the cutest boy in the world is, you know, well, he's like 12. But moving is a good thing for him, because I really do kind of need to keep him on the hamster wheel. You know, he's, y'all know I'm 53 and he's 43, which is a terrible thing. If I had been looking at all, I would have been looking for really old, really bad heart, lots of money, no relatives, and really thick cataracts. And so then I would always be young and cute. But no, I got the cutest boy in the world. But on the upside, so to speak, by the time he needs Viagra, I'll be dead. And of course, when he does take his glasses off, He is nearly legally blind, which I do think explains a great deal about our relationship. And he has dyslexia, but just a touch of it. I mean, it really only manifests itself so that we call the wrong people on the phone a lot. But he also has what I call dyslusia, which means that he is compelled to put things away, not so much to remember where he put them. The man could have his own private Easter egg hunt. He has no idea. He just puts away. He has no idea where it is. So all my sequin crap is in the black hole where he put it away. So I've got my Porter Wagner. My nails do match the Porter Wagner. And I did, of course, wear my travel hair. You know, I can always tell who's new because everybody else knows about my travel hair and that it's going to come off. I'm 53 years old, which I think is a little old for all this hair. But, and that is, it's one of the worst parts about getting old. Not that there are any good parts, but it's, but giving up the hair tossing, you know, you could sling that hair around. It was just used for punctuation. But this will stay on for some pretty good tossing. If y'all happen to come across some with a lot of gray in it, please get me one. Okay? Because that is where we're heading. I took it off today on that. We taped something at what was it? Reggie Rivers. And it'll be on, I think, next month. And I took the travel hair off, and it took him a while to regroup. he was not expecting me to take my... People are never expecting you to take your hair off. It's a good, you know... I'm going to read just a little bit for y'all. Now, when I sign your book, when we get done, I'll sign your book, and I'll put my business card in it. It says, lick you all over 10 cents. Ask about our other specialties. When you use it, and I can kind of tell by looking at y'all which ones will. The two on the couch over here for sure. Get the dime first. We all like to think they won't cheat us out of a dime, but history has sadly shown otherwise, has it not? Then that's your loss leader. The other specialties in the fine print should be wildly expensive. That is my financial tip. Reggie was also not prepared for that. Things to avoid if possible on your wedding day. If you've been living with the groom for the last 5 years and the two of you have three children ranging in age from age 7 to 6 months and you're visibly pregnant again, unless you just have a really wicked sense of humor, not to mention irony, you might not want to choose "We've Only Just Begun" as your wedding anthem. Even if the wedding is outdoors, it's generally considered impolite for any of your bridesmaids or groomsmen to smoke during the ceremony. If this is a potentiality within your inner circle, there's not much hope for curbing the behavior of your common garden variety guest. And I think you should probably prepare yourself that there may be spitters amongst them as well. Have someone frisk all members of the wedding party for hidden flasks. Even if it is a very long service, it is not ever acceptable for any person standing at the front of the gathering to whip out even the most cleverly disguised vessel and furtively sip from it, mainly because then everybody else will want some, and it deteriorates into elbow nudging and whispering and whining and passing and grabbing and more, and then louder whispering about who's getting more than their share. There are several ways to avoid this, and the best is to have a very short service to ensure that even your thirstiest attendees can make it through without a pit stop. If you insist on dragging the thing out, then you might want to just have the ushers hand everybody a small flask with their program so they can numb themselves at will during the service. Queen Fifi advised against having a handsome 6'4" meat carver at the reception if one's mother is a tad on the trashy side. Apparently, Fifi was on the guest list at a soiree once where this happened, and the mother of the bride absconded with the meat carver. And the disgruntled dad was left to carve the meat his own self. The meat reportedly was hacked viciously and slapped onto the plates of confused and wary partygoers. Not festive. A nameless queen who knows who she is cautions us against serving M&Ms in little paper cups at outdoor weddings. A little-known fact is that squirrels love M&Ms and will brave just about anything to get at them. Another little-known fact, while M&Ms may not melt in your hand, they will, however, melt if a squirrel steps on them on a hot day, resulting in brightly colored little squirrel tracks on the tablecloths. Some Canadian queens wrote to tell me that since gay marriages were legalized in Ontario, there were a few new rules to consider. For instance, you may not know it's bad luck if either of the grooms has dated the preacher. The groom should counsel his groomsmen against making references to the breasts of any females, whether they are in attendance or not. My friend Sam Prestridge swears to me that he actually witnessed a groomsman meeting the mother of the bride for the first time, and by way of greeting, he seized the woman's hands and, stretching her arms out wide, joyfully exclaimed, "Ooh-wee! Now I see where Sally got all them titties." If you mention this to your intended groom and he doesn't understand why this would be a necessary precaution, reconsider your choice of grooms. Unless you've had extensive training at one of those Southern Belle historical reenactment events at an antebellum mansion in Natchez, Mississippi, you probably want to avoid wearing a hoop skirt. If you insist on wearing one, though, this would not be a good time to adhere to our never wear panties to a party rule. Yeah. Most of y'all know, I think, where that rule came from. It was in complete innocence, really. I was about 14 and a half months pregnant and still married to the Antichrist. And we were getting dressed to go to a party, and I was struggling into a pair of pantyhose. And some of the gentlemen in the audience may not be aware of the fact that sometimes when we wear pantyhose, we don't wear panties with them, hence the name pantyhose, because we are vitally concerned with VPL, visible panty line. Now, why I thought at that advanced stage of pregnancy that anybody was going to be looking at my ass, I don't know. But hope does spring eternal. And so I'm struggling into them, and y'all know how that is. If you've ever been pregnant, you're working blind. You can't see your feet. You have no idea what's going on. By the time you get them on, usually they're backwards, and you just say the hell with it and go on because it's too hard to start over. So I'm sweating and struggling into these things. And he comes through the room, and he goes, "You're not wearing panties?" And really, just out of supreme irritation and to blow him off, I just, "Oh, you never wear panties party." And went on with my struggle and realized about 30 seconds later that he was still standing there, kind of slack-jawed and mouth-breathing, as y'all are wont to do from time to time. And he said, "Does nobody?" As if there had not been, never would be, a pair of panties at a party, and he was the only guy that knew. You know, you can't make nothing but a man out of them. And I don't care who he is, when you get him home, there's something bad wrong with him. But that being said, they're kind of like ice. We have not found a reasonable substitute just yet, so we make do with what we got. But anyway, after that, we just thought it was funny. We made it a rule. We've got T-shirts that say that. We've got bumper stickers that say that. Casey Jones, our songwriter from Nashville, has written the song. And the chorus is, "Never wear panties to a party if you want to have a really good time. Put on your sequins and your sparkly crown, but don't wear anything you might want to pull down." It's our hymn. And so that's, you know, where that came about. But now, one thing that this whole queen thing has done for me has gotten me completely over little old ladies. Little larva always coming up to me at book signings going, "You know, can I get this book for my mama?" And I go, "Honey, mama knows. Mama knows. Mama has heard. You got here somehow. You know, I did not invent this stuff. Lord knows I wish I had. I'm sure the royalties would be much greater than they are on books. But I did not make it up." And, but I was... I was speaking someplace one time, and this very little, very old lady tottered up to me afterwards on her walker. She came up after, and she said, "I think that never wear panties to a party thing is the smartest thing I ever heard." I said, "Well, yes, ma'am." She said, "Well, you wouldn't wear a mask if you wanted to be kissed." Now, I will tell you, it takes a lot to shock me. I just said, "No, ma'am, I guess not." So, apparently Grandma has heard too. And likes it. If you're going to commit matrimony outside, do take into consideration the possibility of active participation by livestock. In some parts of the world, in certain rural areas of Germany, for instance, it's considered bad form not to have a cow in the wedding party. I read in the paper about a wedding with a cow named Paula, who was the guest of honor. Now, during the ceremony, Miss Paula wandered off. Cows apparently do not have the memories attributed to elephants, and Paula forgot that she was an honored guest at a wedding. She did, however, remember that she needed to go to the bank, and so she did. She left the ceremony and strolled into a nearby financial institution. The bank spokeswoman reported that it was an extraordinary experience for the banking customers and employees alike, but it was over very quickly. Paula simply entered the bank and made an elegant turn. That's what the paper said. The cow made an elegant turn. Let me just say that no one has ever described any movement of my own as anything like an elegant turn. Anyway, immediately following her elegant turn, Paula vacated the bank, and who knows what happened after that. The newspaper account was not nearly detailed enough about the whole thing. It did, however, tell me that the cow was at the wedding in keeping with local custom. Perhaps she was a cow hired for the occasion rather than a personal family cow for whom the ceremony would have had personal meaning. And that explains her aberrant wedding behavior. Paula was invited to the wedding so the bride, as a part of the ceremony, could milk her, thus demonstrating her, the bride's, skills. Now that right there brings up yet another glaring lapse in the reporting of this event. There was no mention whatsoever of the skills the groom would or should be called upon to demonstrate. I'm not sure about other parts of the country, but in the South, the cow is actually the impetus for a large number of weddings each year. Those of us of a certain age do recall our mama's admonitions against fooling around with boys to whom we were not officially married. It went like this. "Why should he buy the cow when he gets the milk for free?" As I have grown much older, I've examined this cow maxim and found it somewhat flawed. The unmistakable implication of the statement is that once one owns the cow, the milk is then free. Well, hardy har har is all I can say to that. Clearly, this little axiom was coined by some Igmo who'd never in his life been married or owned livestock, since both propositions are among the most costly undertakings imaginable. Wives and cows alike can exact heavy tolls, pain, money, heartache, and tears, you name it. Ask anybody who's ever had either one or worse, both. Certainly free is not a term that pops up often in discussions about marriage or cattle. I personally do wonder, though, how come nobody ever raised the question of why should we buy the pig when all we want is a little sausage? Divorce etiquette. You must not sleep with your lawyer or his, at least not until your divorce is completed. Everybody always finds out, and it never works in your favor. If you're going to sleep with somebody in this deal, I'd say make it the judge. In the case of double best friends between two divorcing couples, nobody in this group should date anybody else in this group unless everyone turns out to be homosexual. This means that if the wives are best friends with each other, and likewise the husbands, one wife cannot go out with her friend's husband, and vice versa, during the divorcing period. Heterosexuals cannot stand up to the inevitable comparisons. But if everybody's switching teams, this rule is moot. Delousing the ring. Queen Susan, who lives and reigns in Austin, Texas, one of my very favorite cities in the U.S. of A. and home to Book People, one of my very favorite booksellers in all the world, wrote that she and her buddy were looking for some kind of ceremony that would cleanse the diamond from an engagement ring after a divorce. They figured, and rightly so, that if anybody knew, it would be me, and they asked for my help. I could scarcely refuse them, nor did I even consider such a possibility. I live, after all, to serve. Queen Susan was concerned about the possibility of residual ickiness having attached itself to her diamond after her divorce. I wrote her back pronto to put her mind at ease. "Susan," I told her, "there is absolutely nothing to this diamond cleansing process. The simple act of removing the wedding band from behind it has almost magical powers. Further curative powers can be obtained by placing the wedding band on a railroad track and thus fashioning a lovely and flat commemorative metal lucky talisman to carry in one's pocket to remind one of one's narrow escape from the fiery pits of hell or something like it. I find it can also be helpful to purchase, ideally with funds obtained from the ex, an additional stone of the same size in order to have a pair of earrings made. Relocating the diamond in question to another part of your body other than your left hand can be beneficial, and having another unsullied stone creates a healthy balance. Diamonds, as you know, are extremely hard stones, and thus they are pretty much impervious to any bad juju emanating from guys, asshats, or otherwise. It goes without saying, of course, that the bigger the diamond, the more impervious it is. As a matter of fact, when you get above the 2 or 3 carat mark, it is amazing just how very impervious they are. You could have gotten it from an axe murderer, and once he is gone out of your life, you'll find you can gaze admiringly at that big diamond for hours on end without a single thought of him muddying the experience for you. If, however, you're in possession of a relatively small stone, it will probably be a good idea for you to go on and trade it in for one or two larger stones that will be more powerful. This will also help you to remember in the future that size really does matter. Once upon a time, just the sound of his name made your panties hit the floor. And now the sight of him, or even the sound of his voice, makes you snarl at the man like a lesbian's dog. It happens. It's going to be all right. Tiara's on, butts out, tits up, and move on, darling. I appreciate it. Couple things and then we'll take questions. I really appreciate y'all coming out tonight, especially how cold it is, and more than anything to this wonderful bookstore. Y'all are so lucky to have such an incredible independent bookseller here in Denver. Y'all need to support them. The independent booksellers are the lifeblood of the publishing industry in this country, and they're the reason why books still exist today. So thank y'all for coming here especially. Now, that being said, you do know it is against the rule to loan my books. Everyone must buy their own. I have massive plastic surgery needs that will never be met if y'all are loaning the damn books. Everybody has to buy their own. There's some things I want y'all to get from me. First of all, to know that you're invited to Jackson, Mississippi, where I'm from, to be in the parade. It's the third weekend in March every year. You can come be in the parade as the queen of whatever you choose. It's the fourth largest St. Patrick's Day parade in the country now, but it's the only one you can show up and be in. In Chicago, you got to be a plumber or a cop. In Savannah, it's a society thing. If you ain't born in it, you ain't getting in it. Ours is a people's parade. Anybody can be in it, and it's a benefit for the Blair E. Batson Children's Hospital. But what I want y'all to get from everything that I do, from the books, from the parade, from the website, sweetpotatoqueens.com, you know that I answer. If you email me, I will write you back. I answer every email myself. The message board of love, where you can talk to each other. What I want you to get from everything that I do is, first of all, the power of play, that you don't get too old to do it. You get old when you quit doing it. That applies whether you're 15 or 105. and it has magical powers of healing and restoration. I don't care who you are, there's something hard going on in your life. And the dressing up funny and acting stupid for just a little while makes it possible to step outside yourself for a little while and become somebody else that doesn't have a worthless ex-husband or a child in therapy or breast cancer or whatever it is that you're dealing with. Makes you a little bit stronger to go back and tote that load when you have to. In my experience, the load will still be there. No one will come and get it while you're gone playing. It will be there. So not to worry on that score. Choice is the most important word in our language. If you ain't loving your life, change it. Life is too short and too long to spend it doing anything that doesn't make your heart sing. Somebody said to me when I was very young that you should do what makes your heart sing and the money will follow. And I really believed that. That struck a chord with me. However, I was 19 and working in the credit department at Sears when I heard it, so it didn't really apply. But when I left there, I took that with me. And in 1982, the first time I rode in the back of the pickup truck and smiled and waved and threw sweet potatoes, I did say out loud, somebody will pay me to do this. And here we are. As far as I know, I'm the world's only full-time professional sweet potato queen. So it is, I am proof positive that you can just do anything and make a living at it. I mean, this is what I do. This is my talent. You know, no matter how pitiful your talent is, you know, and it couldn't be much worse than this. If you lift it up, God will honor it. You did get here with a gift, and you're intended to use it. I think that dreams are very important. As dreams, they're completely worthless. From my own personal experience, I can tell you it is infinitely better to live your dreams than it is to dream them. And no matter what it is that you're trying to accomplish in life, whether it's something difficult that you're trying to overcome or something wonderful that you're trying to achieve, the task at hand will not ever be greater than the power of God to help you do it. And the will of God will not ever put you in a situation where the grace of God is insufficient. I believe that laughter and sex and chocolate are three of the greatest blessings that we're given as human beings. And if my books can bring a little bit of any or all of that to someone's life, then that is my contribution to world peace. And you're welcome. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Who's got questions? You know, I know everything, so go ahead. Yes. Could we make the next book out of chocolate? Well, you know, they can print on it now. That is an excellent idea. We could just eat them. But then it would be, and you'd have to buy it over and over. Even better. Yeah. A renewable resource. What else? Who has been to the parade besides Nuclea? Yes, Jordan has been. Very good. Y'all need to come. The next book. Oh, there's a dog. Four dogs. There's four dogs there? Oh, good. They're wonderful. They're perfectly, if they're being trained to lie down, they're certainly doing. I'm sorry? I think so. I think they can. I know they can't ride motorcycles. But I bet, because you can take a service dog anywhere. So, yes. The next book will be fiction. It will be made-up stuff. It will still be about the Sweet Potato Queens, but it will be made-up stuff instead of true stuff, which makes our mothers happy. I think my own mother does tell people that these are fiction. Did you have a question? Yes. Well, how has Katrina affected the Sweet Potato Queens? Well, we had 80-mile-an-hour winds in Jackson, 200 miles inland, and did not have power for a long time, but except for us, because, of course, the cutest boy in the world can fix anything, so we have many generators. And we live on a lake, and there's something to do with the sewage that is called a grinder pump, and I don't know what it is, but everybody's got one, and it doesn't work when the power goes out. Which means you can't flush the toilets if the power goes out, except at our house. So, I mean, we're like legendary at the lake. They have toilets. Their toilets work. But I have been down five or six times with an organization called Chefs for Humanity, founded by Kat Cora and Deborah Rainey. to cook for the people down there. Every area that I have been to has been worse than the last. New Orleans has gotten all the press because they act so awful. but I can tell you that the Gulf Coast of Mississippi is obliterated. It is gone. It is absolutely gone. And, you know, where you go by, I mean, they had to use GPS to even determine where things used to be because there are no landmarks. There are no, there are houses where, I mean, there's no plumbing stops left. I mean, it's just gone. And there are people who are gone who they will never find who thought they could ride it out. Several of the queens have had property down there. Carol had a family home down there, and it survived. Camille did not, you know, and that's, there was so much warning for this storm. And so it is maddening that people didn't leave. But it was, the thought was, you know, that they were bulletproof if they survived Camille. But they kept saying, you know, this was Camille, this is Katrina, get the hell out. And, it's just staggering to see the destruction. But the we've raised about $25,000 on the message board from Queens all over the country, and it goes to my church, which is a little inner city church, which is it's the most unusual church I've ever seen. Everybody really is welcome, and we've been taking groups down every week, working with people. And there was a woman in New Jersey who sent 13, she owns a children's clothing company. She sent 1,300 pieces of new children's clothes, different sizes, and 10 car-sized crates of toys at Christmas. And so it's, we appreciate the rest of the country helping us out, and it's going to be a long, long time coming back. What else? Yes. Well, I think we have just dealt with him right here. Yeah, it's spelled B-W-A-H-A-H-A-H-A-H. And that is kind of my theory on divorce, is that you know sooner or later you're going to laugh about it. And you're going to tell all this weird stuff like that, and that everyone else will laugh about it. So you should make it sooner rather than later. You know? Is there anything else you'd like to share? Oh, and a little louder. Oh, he speaks, the almost ex-husband who speaks in a Chinese accent, but he's from New Jersey. And I'm assuming not of Oriental extraction. I wish he was here. Yeah, let's call him. Put him on speakerphone. Well, I think I feel better about that already, don't you? I think we've dealt with that. Or did you want something mean to do to him? This was pretty mean. Good, good. I'm glad. If you came to the parade, you would be completely healed, I can tell you. What else? Anybody else with any weird ex-husbands? Yeah, it's good. Or wives? No, we're not. We do not discriminate. Okay. I am going to sign books, and I am happy to personalize. I will sign things I did not write. And oddly enough, that does occur. I was in New Orleans once signing, and this, well, he was drunk, but he came and had this book, and I said, well, sir, I didn't write this. And he said, oh, you know, sign it. So I just wrote, I did not write this book, Jill Conner. And I told that story recently. I was in Durham, North Carolina, and somebody came through with a bit that said, oh, they didn't have to, you know, the books were upstairs. They didn't have, just sign this. And so I wrote, I also did not write this book, Jill Conner Brown. So precedent has been set. And I'm over here. Okay, thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for John Hodgman, Sister Helen Prejean, Adrian McKinsey, Joanne Greenberg, Allegra Goodman, John Grogan, and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on February 16th, 2006.